Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
Hey, we want to let you know our last episode with WBEZ is going to be on May 28th. You have probably heard by now WBEZ announced they are stopping production of several podcasts and laying people off. Unfortunately, Nerdette is one of those shows, and I am one of those people. We are ultimately hoping to find Nerdette a new home, but for now, we are still bringing you another month of regular Friday episodes, and May Book Club is happening. Okay, let's get to the show. From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend and the last one in April somehow. This week, we are going to take some time to reflect on the almost 11 years that Nerdette has been around, and I want to bring you a couple of my all-time favorite interviews. Later in the show, we're going to hear from the epically delightful Ross Gay. But first, we are going to dive into the archives and listen to a classic. Did you know that Stephen King, yes, that Stephen King, loves corgis? As also a corgi lover, I was thrilled to get to talk to him almost exactly 8 years ago. And the conversation was just as weird and wonderful as you would expect. Thank you for taking the time while you're in Florida. I appreciate it.
Well, absolutely. You want to talk about corgis? I'm your man.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea. People keep asking me, like, so what are you going to talk to Stephen King about? And I say corgis, and they just give me this weird blank stare like they don't get it.
That's okay. Some of us do.
So tell me about your love of corgis. When did this begin?
Oh, let's see. Probably around, I think, 1983 or 1984, when my kids were little, my wife's brother came over with a huge corgi named Jeremy. And I just fell in love with Jeremy right off the bat, and I said, we've got to have a corgi like that. And we got a corgi whose name was Bill, and he had epilepsy, but he was a terrific dog. He was terrific with the kids, and he lived for about 3 years. And ever since then, we've had corgis. We've had probably five or six of them in all, and we have two now. We have my wife's corgi, whose name is Vixie. She's a rescue dog, and she's 13 years old. She's the thing of good. And she went everywhere with Tabitha, and she wanted to sleep on the bed next to Tabitha, and she just would go crazy when Tabby left. And I said, finally, I want a dog that likes me.
So, I want my own corgi.
I want my own corgi. So my older son, Joe, also has a corgi whose name is McMurtry.
Oh, my gosh.
Named after Larry McMurtry, the novelist. And he said, well, I got mine from this lady who raises corgis in New Hampshire, and why don't you give her a call? So we did, and we got Molly, who is the thing of evil. And now we have two corgis in the house. One is old and one is young. So we have a nice older lady and one who's sort of a backup.
The thing of evil would be your corgi, wouldn't it, Stephen?
Right. That's Molly. Molly is the thing of evil.
So you talk about seeing Jeremy for the first time and just falling in love with him. What was it about Jeremy?
Well, corgis have this look. They're always smiling, and their eyes are always bright, and they're very smart dogs, and they're loving, and they're also herding dogs, which I like. And my favorite story, we had a corgi named Frodo, who lived to be, I think, 13 or 14 years old. And one day, we had a wedding reception in our backyard. This was in Maine. And we had a tent And there were probably 40 or 50 people there, and everybody was walking around, and they were eating sandwiches, and Frodo was out there, and he was watching everything that was going on. And one of the couples that was there had a little girl who was probably 3 years old, and she was wearing this, like, almost like a princess dress. It was all fluffy, and it had a lot of petticoats and that sort of thing. And at some point, she wandered away from everybody and went out on the front lawn, and there's a road out there. And the next thing I saw was Frodo had went to get her and was pulling her back by the hem of her dress. And she was giggling like crazy, but Frodo knew that she was supposed to be with the rest of the herd. So he pulled her back. And that's the way that they are. That's the way that they roll. They love to have everybody together.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is about dogs is I always say you can learn a lot about acceptance from a dog because they pretty much take the world as it is. And Nixie did that, and all the other ones do as well. You train them up, and they accept that, and you give them love, and they give it back. It's great. It's great to have a dog. And I posted a lot of pictures of Molly on the internet. You know, I call it the thing of evil.
The thing of evil.
Yeah, it amuses me to think of a corgi as sort of an arch supervillain that's secretly running the whole world. My imagination just runs that way, Greta. So I post the pictures on the net and everything, but the great secret is that Molly's really a thing of good. She's busy, and at the same time, she's, well, I want to say pretty well behaved. If my wife were here right now, she'd be laughing, but she's flown off to New England, so.
So you get to say she's actually good.
Do you have a corgi by any chance?
I do have a corgi. Her name is Scout.
Uh-huh.
And she is actually extremely anxious. So she, the smiling face that you described earlier, Scout kind of looks terrified all the time.
Well, Vixen is terrified a lot of the time. She came to us and she trembled all over whenever anybody came near except Tabby. And she bonded with Tabby immediately. And now she allows me to pet her and feed her, but nobody else can really come near because she just sort of cringes. But Molly, on the other hand, is brave as the devil. And as far as she's concerned, she's a big dog.
You know, there's a really great saying. I can't remember who said it, but it's that corgis, you know, some people say corgis are big dogs in small dog bodies. But someone said what they actually are is big dogs with no legs.
I remember taking Molly on a walk one time. Not Molly, this was Frodo. And because it was several years ago, I was walking with him, and this old fellow came along and looked at her and said, "Does that dog need to jump up to go to the bathroom?"
And you said, "No, sir, she does just fine."
She does just fine, that's right. Is your dog named after Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird?
I assume so. She's also a rescue, so I don't really know. But I think that is the deal, because she is a lady named Scout, of which there aren't many in the world.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I like to call her Scooter.
Scooter, I like it. They're fast. Molly's very fast in the backyard.
Yeah, she's got hustle, man. People at the dog park are always like, "Oh, that poor corgi's not going to be able to do anything with that tennis ball." And I'm like, just you wait, man.
Right. Not only are they fast, but they can jump. And, they can do a lot of stuff.
So this is a really weird question, but I think you're going to like it. What is your favorite corgi body part?
Oh, favorite corgi body part. I think their little short legs, because they move so fast. What you were saying before about, oh, that little dog won't be able to do anything. They've never seen a corgi run. The legs just absolutely blur into motion, and their bodies get low to the ground, and they just, they're scooters. They scoot along. And so I would say probably the little short legs are my favorite part.
They really can. So it's funny to hear that your son has a corgi, because my parents have three corgis.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I ended up with one, just because I fell in love with them too. What do you think it is about, like, this generational thing with the corgis? Why? Like, are our brains just broken?
I don't really know what it is, but I think that it's a form of love, and that you fix on one dog that you really love, and you see the beauty in that dog. When I look at Molly, I see her broad chest and how muscular she is and the brightness of her eyes. And as I say, whenever she looks up, there's this sort of fiendish grin on her face. There are those things. And of course, I love when you bend to stroke a corgi, they lay their ears back to improve the stroking surface as much as they can. And they don't have tails, so their whole rear end just wiggles with joy when you come in. So I think that I particularly care for Molly because I understand she's probably my last dog. She's a year and a half old. I'm 68. And if things work out the way that I hope they do, we'll play out at about the same time.
That's pretty sweet, Stephen. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen King, thank you so much for talking with me about corgis. This has been really fun.
That's really fun for me, too, because nobody ever asks me about my dog, and that's a nice thing. So you take care of yours, and I'll take care of mine.
All right. You got a deal, sir.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you. Have a good one. How delightful was that?
Oh, my gosh. I just forgot how actually amazing that conversation was. Scout is still going strong. She will be 13 this July. In just a minute, we will hear about the book that changed my life.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max. And listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
It really is no understatement to say that Ross Gay's Book of Delights changed my life. Ross is a poet and a teacher who spent a whole year writing an essay a day about a delight. I read it back in December of 2020, which I'm sure you'll remember was a really fun and easy time for everyone. But the idea of delight has always resonated with me, and this book was exactly what I needed at exactly the right time. All through 2022, I wrote about a delight a day because I loved Ross's idea so much. And it's true that the more you seek out delight, the more delight shows up for you. So here is our conversation with Ross from 2021. Ross, welcome to Nerdette.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I have to say this is especially exciting, partly because, gosh, I guess it was a long time ago now, probably like 5 or 6 years ago, Nerdette podcast got an iTunes review from someone who complained that I used the word delightful too often.
That's great.
So yeah, it was sort of like reading your book. It was just, I don't know, it affirmed a lot for me, and I'm so grateful for that. Yeah. For people who haven't read it yet, can you define a delight for us?
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, I can say what the book was, and then maybe I'll be able to say what a delight was in the process of that. You know, I basically, one day I was like I was in the midst of a kind of lovely moment. And in my head, I said, oh, this is delightful. You know, I was kind of walking through, you know, fields of flowers, more or less. and I thought, oh, this is delightful. I should write a little essay about it. And then I immediately thought, oh, I should write an essay every day for a year about it. So, you know, so I set myself that task to write an essay a day, to write them quickly, and to write them by hand. Those are my three little constraints. But the book ends up being sort of this you know, year-long sort of exploration of things that do sort of delight me. And then the essays are basically like, why does this delight me? Why do, you know, high fives from strangers sometimes delight me? Why is it delightful to ride a train and to notice how people just leave their stuff around on the Amtrak train or whatever? So in a way, you know, that's all a long way of saying, I don't know exactly how to define a delight except to kind of know it when it's happening.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that in a lot of ways, it really can be anything, right? I mean, like, I think about pie for breakfast as being absolutely delightful.
That's great.
Or like, you know, a new leaf on a plant in your windowsill. Or like, I don't know, one that I noticed the other day was getting to the end of a tube of chapstick. Just because I feel like so often in our lives, we don't actually use up the whole thing of something before we end up with a bunch more of them. But to actually like stick with something long enough that you get to the end of it was just like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool. You know?
Yeah. And that's one of the things I think delight. There's some kind of like relationship between delight and curiosity, because probably before you get to the end of a tube of chapstick, it wouldn't have occurred to you that like, oh, this is. Ah, look at the end of the tube of chapstick, you know.
What is so down there?
Yeah, what's down there? So it requires some degree of like understanding that you do not understand what will delight you. Like there is more delight. There is more delight than you are aware of, you know.
Right. And like an openness, I think, too, to recognizing those experiences when they happen.
Yes. Yeah, an openness and the kind of like, you know, I think part of what that book is sort of getting into is like a practice.
Yeah.
A practice of attending to the experiences. So having your radar onto them in a way.
So you wrote this book a couple of years ago now, very much not during a pandemic. So a lot of the delights that you mention are things like, you know, having to move your leg out of the way at the coffee shop to make sure that you're not getting in someone's way, or like a random encounter with the flight attendant when you bring a tomato plant on board. I wonder, like, do you think it's harder now to find delights because the pandemic has, you know, in so many ways, we are so much more closed off than we used to be, you know?
I mean, one of the things with that book, when I read from it now, I'm like, man, there's so much touching. There's so much, there's so much contact, you know, in the book. So that's different, but my inclination is to say that, there's still an abundance of delight.
So are there ever days, or were there while you were writing the book, where you're just like in just enough of a mood that you're like, you know what, fuck delight, I'm done? You know, like some days it's hard.
Oh, it's hard. I know. You know, I think it's probably, there was probably a reason that I gave myself the task to do it every single day, and that I gave myself the task to do it quickly. So that's a way of saying, no, I didn't have that feeling. But I absolutely, and I think it's kind of threaded throughout the book, you know, delight's opposite is, to me, is constantly present in that book. And that's sort of what makes the book interesting, you know.
Yeah,
is that it's,
totally.
It's like delight in the midst of, you know. Mm-hmm.
Delight despite.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that I think is interesting is that, I think it was sort of midway through writing the book. I think I remember this right, that my therapist was, you know, it was like, oh, you have a real hard time trusting people. And he may have said it more emphatically than that. It may have been like, you have a fundamental distrust. And I like lost my shit. I cracked up. So because I was like, oh, I'm writing this book in part to sort of affirm this thing that I want to believe and I want to practice, you know? So that's all a way of saying, look, I get it. And I think also part of the impetus for the book, or the, what the book kind of ends up doing that I love, is that it ends up being like a friend who can kind of be like, you know, tap you on the shoulder and be like, there is this too.
Yeah.
Which I think is sort of what being in community, part of the pleasure, the relief, the joy of being in community is that when it's almost impossible to do that, maybe someone will be like, and also, here's this. The practice of attending to your delight, it kind of reminds you or shows you the fact that you might constantly be in sort of like, in the midst of these things, but you just might not be noting them and articulating them.
Yeah.
You know, and then noting and articulating and then like sharing them. To me, that's like the thing. It's like, whoa, I didn't realize this. And the more you get sort of like, oh, I didn't realize that this thing delights me, the more you're kind of like, oh, probably there are many things that I don't realize delight me.
That was Ross Gay back in 2021. Apologies for that rough audio. Ross, when I asked him to put headphones on, said he was pretty sure there were gummy bears in his headphone jack. And that's something that I think about a lot, actually. I will admit, I fell off the delight wagon last year. But let me tell you, the day I found out I was getting laid off from WBEZ, I started the delight practice back up. And so many of the delights that I have cataloged came from listeners like you who reached out to show your support for Nerdette. You use words like delight, of course, but also community, curiosity, inclusion, kindness, comfort, and generosity. We have gotten beautiful voice messages like this one from Nerdette listener Erin.
I eagerly await the podcast and the newsletter each week. And as I sit here looking at my bookshelves, I think of how many of these books that I absolutely love dearly I would never have found if it weren't for you. I will miss you a lot. I'm excited for what comes next for you, but definitely sad for me to lose you all in my ears each week and all of your wonderful recommendations. So thank you very much for all of the companionship over the years.
Erin, that was beautiful. I cried when I first heard it. I'm just going to keep crying, I think. But in any case, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you who have reached out over the last couple of weeks. You have been such a huge bright spot, and I am utterly delighted by that. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bowen at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network, and Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. We will see you next week.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.